Cultured Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
So it's not a sin in your church to have an abortion?
That's the kind of conversation we would have, finding out your story, where you're from. God's the judge. People have to live to their own conviction.
The science is clear. The Bible is clear. And if we're honest, our intuitions are clear. We know what we're killing. We're killing a human being.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's talk about blank and marriage. This is Wretched Radio.
Love and marriage, love and marriage go together like a horse and
not always.
This, I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other.
We used to. Did you know that it was Thomas Cranmer, the Archbishop from England, 16th century, as a part of the Common Book of Prayer, included marriage vows that introduced for the first time officially, there were other times that predate this, were the words to love and to cherish were the centerpiece of the marriage vows. Because unfortunately, apparently, love wasn't always a big deal. That'll happen with arranged marriages. It was the Protestant, Thomas Cranmer, who said, nope, love is a component of marriage. How did he know? Where did he get that? He didn't make it up. He didn't get some counsel from Henry VIII, which is never a good idea, frankly. Instead, he read the Bible, that husbands are to love their wives. Women are to love their husbands. That we play roles in the marriage, and what it all revolves around is love for one another that is grounded in our love for Jesus Christ. It's the Bible that tells us love is a key component to marriage. It's a command, in fact. Reading a book called Get Married by a Roman Catholic named Brad Wilcox, Why Americans Must Defy the Elites, Forge Strong Families, and save civilization. Well, okay, helping people understand the joys of marriage and having children, it'll help civilization. It ain't going to save it. Only one thing can do that. That would be called revival. A few highlights from the book that I hope will encourage you, and perhaps especially if you're young, and especially perhaps if you're male, because one of the chapters in the book, which we will get to, deals with the latest feminist push to make men, well, basically women, extremely soft, very metrosexual. Well, even that's probably considered too masculine these days. And the shocker of all shockers is it seems that the elites that tell us marriage, it has to be with soft men and strong women, it isn't the way that they're living. And perhaps we should be a little bit emboldened to be able to proclaim, sorry, men aren't going to become sissies to accommodate the zeitgeist of third wave feminism. We'll get to that in a bit. Seeing marriage as an opportunity to shine, writes Wilcox. In other words, for me to look great, to seek your own individual advantage, advance your own agenda, and protect what you have, can put you on a trajectory that fosters resentment, conflict, self-centeredness, and unhappiness in your marriage and even its loss. If you read enough on the social media about the subject of marriage, you gotta love yourself. You gotta put yourself first. That's what leads to happiness. And he goes through a number of those articles. They're lies. They're just lies. They're studies that what they extrapolate from them is absolutely ridiculous. It's promoting a me-first attitude. It's not a we-first, it's me-first. And he says just the opposite of what the elites tell us. If you're not a we-marriage, you ain't going to have a marriage, at least not very much of a marriage. Marriages are more likely to survive and thrive when husbands and wives aim for team-first communion over me-first competition in word and deed. Now, here's some of the examples. Psychologist Stephanie Sarkis This is in the Huff and Puff and Blow Your Worldview Down post. Urges couples to keep separate accounts to avoid the conflict that can arise from differences in how partners handle money. Oh, he's dealing with one of my pet issues. I feel so strongly about this, and this social study actually affirmed that if I were counseling a couple and they were not prepared to have joint accounts, I would encourage them to not get married yet. You're not ready. Because joint account, that is just a tangible sign of what's going on inside of your heart. And when you want to keep things separate, you have your account, and maybe I'll have my account, and then we'll have this joint thing together. You're me first. You're not we first. And guess what? It doesn't work, despite what the psychologists will tell you. If couples keep separate accounts, they'll avoid conflict that can arise from differences in how partners handle money. One person is usually a saver, the other a spender. So better to let partners handle their own money and avoid the money arguments that can get heated and even lead to a breakup. In fact, she tells couples separate accounts can not only keep the peace at home, but lead to more intimacy in your relationship. Whoa. Wow, that's a bit of a stretch, isn't it? Journalist Catherine Kitchener is a fan of the me first approach of marriage and money. This is from The Atlantic, arguing keep separate accounts. It doesn't signal a lack of trust. It's a way for spouses to show they trust each other more. Oh, I see what you did there. I'm not going to check in on you. Do whatever you want to do with your money. This is just gaslighting is what this is. University of Colorado Boulder study found that shared accounts increase feelings of financial togetherness, making purchases and financial goals feel shared. That's one study that found that couples who pooled their money were satisfied in their relationships compared to couples who keep separate accounts. Couples who only kept their money separate were more than 20% more likely to divorce or separate. Cornell University, a big study, found that keeping separate accounts was particularly bad for, you guessed it, wives and girlfriends. There's a shocker. The shared accounts makes better marriage stories is not about selection effects. Now, this is a cause and effect and correlation and connection, always kind of a challenging aspect of doing any social studies. But the question is, did the people who have joint accounts, were they better suited for marriage? Were they already on the same page? And that was the joint account is a fruit of a better foundation. Or is it possible that even if you don't have a great match, you have joint accounts, you're going to flourish? Well, that's the case that he tries to make from the book. The shared accounts make better marriages story is not all about selection effects, where the types of husbands and wives who keep separate accounts are just less marriage-minded to begin with, or where husbands and wives who are in marriage trouble are more likely to set up separate accounts. This is a new study from Indiana University. Randomly assigned newly married couples to one, joint checking accounts, another group to separate accounts, a third group, whatever you want to do, and they tracked them for 2 years. Guess which couples thrived? After 2 years, couples in the joint checking accounts condition exhibited significantly greater relationship quality than couples in the other two conditions. Why? Why does that help? Because you're doing marriage God's way. And that's what I kept reading through this book. I didn't run into a single Bible verse. If you do marriage God's way, even as a pagan, even if you aren't nuts about your spouse, things are going to go better. Because I'm sorry, but it is built into the fabric of the universe. Just as there are laws of nature, there are spiritual laws. Call them metaphysical if you like. But if you do things God's way, one flesh, do it. Commit to one another. Forget the separate accounts. Forget that, well, that's my stuff. That's my inheritance. It's no longer yours. It's y'all's. All y'all. All y'all. What's the plural in Southern? All y'all. What's needed? Couples who do not hold more things in common, from last names to Facebook profile pics, are more likely to flourish. Who do and hold more things in common, the more you do together, the more it's about we and not me. A YouGov survey. Couples who share the same last name. Oh, what? That's so puritanical. How could it possibly be? Why would we have such a horrible patriarchal tradition? Well, it's biblical. The cleaving to one another. A new identity. This is a new union. And it is Team Us. We're all behind the same name here. Guess what? People who share last names had a stronger sense of their identity as a family and were significantly more likely to be happily married and less likely to have plans for divorce. It is a lie that teaches marriage just exists to make you happy, that you're going to be just like you are, only with another person in the house. Doesn't work. Why? Because it's not the way that God describes and defines marriage. Is what brings you together today and every day. And when you do it individually, lots of luck. This is Wretched Radio. This May, how would you like to create countless Mother's Day celebrations? You say, I can't do that. I only have one mother. While that is most certainly true, there are countless women who find themselves in a crisis pregnancy situation, perhaps being pressured to abort their child. Enter Preborn Ministries, providing ultrasounds, clothing, food, counseling, and best of all, the gospel. And if you would consider supporting Preborn Ministries during the month of May, we have a matching gift campaign taking place, which means dollar for dollar, your gift will be matched. That means if you provide, say, 5 ultrasounds for $28 per ultrasound, that will be 10 babies, because women choose life when they see their child in utero. Would you please consider creating countless Mother's Day celebrations? Preborn.org/wretched.
Thank you so much for listening to Wretched Radio today. Coming up this Thursday night, May the 9th at 9 p.m., it is the premiere of our Let's Do Something Together event. This is where you'll get the opportunity to meet the 8 powerful voices that will be coming and joining our ministry later in the year. Men like Pastor Tim Challies, Pastor Brad Bigney, Dr. Andrew Walker, Dr. Jason Lyle, Dr. John Kreitz, and Dr. Adam Tyson will all be a part of the event, along with Phil Johnson and Ken Ham. You don't want to miss it. It's coming up this Thursday night, premiering at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Wretched YouTube channel. Don't miss it. And you can also go by there, subscribe to the Wretched YouTube channel now, hit the bell, and get notified just before the event gets underway. And if you want to be a part of all of the changes that are coming this year, make sure that you join us as a gospel partner. We're currently in the middle of a $250,000 match campaign. You can get all of the details right now at wretched.org/fellows. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
I'm so excited about this. That's right. I'm actually giddy about Bibles. We are going to be doing another campaign with our good friends at the Masters Academy International. We're going to be sending MacArthur Study Bibles to places that, for various reasons, our brothers and sisters don't have study Bibles. And we did a campaign to the Philippines. 10,000 Bibles were sent to our brothers and sisters in the Philippines. I think we're either going to do another 10 or 15,000 to countries whose names we better not speak. So be on the lookout for it. And if you'd like to start even supporting that now, that would rock. You can learn more about the amazing Masters Academy International. Don't forget, they've got the mini seminaries around the globe training indigenous pastors to rightly divide the word of truth. Telling you, first-class ministry with generational impact. You can learn more at wretched.org/Bible.
Know your church fathers. Cyprian was a 3rd century theologian from Carthage, North Africa, where he served as bishop until he was beheaded under Emperor Valerian. Cyprian authored a book called On the Unity of the Church, stressing the unity of the universal church as well as the importance and authority of the local church. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If you gotta be me, there's probably not gonna be much of a we. This is Wretched Radio, a book that merely affirms what the Bible teaches. Do marriage God's way, it goes better. This fellow, Brad Wilcox, who wrote Get Married, he's on a mission to try to persuade especially young people marriage is good and it can be successful. But, and he uses social studies, I use the Bible to say, a marriage must be an all-in kind of affair. You leave father and mother, you cleave to one another, you become one flesh, not two fleshes, one flesh, not two names, one name, not two accounts, one accounts. And the whole idea of self-care should go flying right out the window. Self-care leads to a happier relationship, says Terry Newsome at Bustle. Quote, because being in a relationship isn't about becoming a pleasing machine that works for everyone but yourself. Well, that would be the opposite of what's the word I'm looking for? Christianity. That's exactly what marriage is about. Doing things for the other and not with a quid pro quo mentality that says, I scratch your back, you're going to scratch my back. No, because we have been given everything in Christ, that Christ sacrificed himself for us. Now, we willingly and happily sacrifice for others, whether we get something in return or not. That's what marriage is all about. But this, she's probably a psychologist, a relationship expert, a sexologist, tells you, no. It's not about being there for everyone. You deserve self-care. Bleep, profanity. Urging readers, get your own hobbies, cultivate friendship outside of the marriage, set your own goals. You doing you, after all, is really healthy for your relationship. Now, let's be clear. Couples can have activities that don't involve one another, but that shouldn't be the centerpiece of the marriage. The other one is the centerpiece. Obviously, Jesus, the foundation. It's not my hobbies. It's not going to sporting events. It's about the other. Yeah, you can do those things. But if you do them because I got to be me, got to do my thing, got to enjoy the stuff I like. You're not taking everything away from me. The Christian would say, yep, I can give up everything because everything was given up for me. I can do that. It ain't nothing. Ain't no big thing. I don't need to do that. I like that. She doesn't. I guess I won't be doing that. No, if she says you like doing that, why don't you go ahead and do that? Then I can go ahead and do that. But not with the attitude that we're doing this thing separately. Be sure to get your wants and needs met, said this relationship expert. Don't forget, the speakers in the car are yours half of the time. Remember that. So is the TV, the credit card, the vacations, the weekends, and the home. And so is the free time. And you'll be full of joy and relief, and it will spill over into your relationship. No, it won't. Because you're still going to be there with the same sinner. And you're going to just keep colliding into each other until, of course, you have separate residences too. Why even stay in the same house? If this is, what is the point? That's an interesting question. I don't know that these relationship experts ever answer that question. If it's all about me and not about we, what am I doing? What? Tax credit? That's it? That's what marriage is all about? A government-run institution where I don't have to pay so much in taxes? That seems pretty reductionistic. Husbands and wives who have a we before me mentality and reject the view that you have to look after your own needs in marriage are more likely to report they are happily married and their marriage is not likely to end in divorce. In other words, people are being lied to. And incidentally, you don't even have to be a Christian for this to work, because doing marriage God's way works regardless of who you are. And I have to confess, this particular chapter in this book called Get Married, I rolled my eyes when it talked about an indicator for marriage success being date night. Because I remember years. That was kind of the big trend in evangelicalism. Do you remember? Got to do the date night, man. That was another one of our trends. You got to get the kids a purity ring. Got to read the prayer of Jabez. You got to have date night. Couch time, snuggle time with you. Got to do it. Well, guess what? It actually turns out it works. Even though I like date night. Frankly, our entire life is a date. I don't even know what a date looks. We just do everything together. Okay, maybe a little codependent. Don't judge. From the book, husbands and wives who have a date night once a month are happiest. Huh. Almost twice as likely to be very happy in their marriage compared to peers without regular date nights. Again, correlation, connection. Date night should be an overflow. I want to be with you, honey. It's a sign I'm in. And you mean so much to me. You're the one I want to spend my time with. And I'm willing to make sure the kids are exhausted so that we can have a date night. Which is it? Don't know. Regular date nights are one of the strongest predictors of marital happiness. A National Marriage Project showed the probability of divorce for couples who set aside couple time at least once a week is 25% less. Wow. You mean to have and to hold, to love and to cherish actually has benefits to it? It absolutely does. But this is not something that we conclude because of social studies. It's because the Bible, unlike the very patriarchal society in which it was written, we love. We don't just get along. We don't browbeat. We don't demand and insist on our own way. No, instead, we serve each other the way that Jesus Christ serves the church. And then he tackles the subject of parenting. And if you're young and you have bought the lie that having kids is going to wreck your life, let's examine that lie. American parents are miserable, writes the Washington Post. Mom and dads face a massive happiness gap. That's just tragic. Why having children is bad for your marriage. NBC piled on. Science proves kids are bad for the earth. Morality suggests we stop having them. That is the message that gets played out constantly. And therefore, so many Gen Zers, they're terrified at the thought of having children. And it has three cultural forces that this plays into. Individualism, hedonism, kind of the same thing, and workism. Because kids are so demanding, you're not going to be able to be your own self. You're going to be a mother. You're going to be chained to the children, and you're not going to be able to live autonomously. The child-free life depicted a beautiful couple vacationing in the tropics with the headline, "When having it all means not having children." You miss out on an impromptu trip to Paris, skydiving lessons, or a cute convertible for two. It might be out if you have a baby at home, said NBC's Today Show. In other words, we're trading our children for finer wine. President Biden tweeting, nearly 2 million women in our country have been locked out of the workforce because they have to care for a child. Because they have to care for a child. Oh, can you imagine? They have to care for a child. They have to pet a puppy. Oh, horrible. Could that possibly be? My Build Back Better. I think that's a typo. I'm pretty certain it's Build Back Broker. Nevertheless, we'll make caregiving accessible and help them get back to work. Back to work. Back to work, women. We care about you. Produce. We've got a GDP, don't you know? What are they telling women? Your job matters more than your children. Wall Street Journal. A poll found 43% of Americans now place a high value on having children, which is down 16 points. Gen Z, millennials, least likely to say that having children was very important to them. Guess what? It's all a lie. Because if you dive into the social studies, a 2021 report, a YouGov survey, childless Americans are now more likely to report that their lives are lonely, and less likely to report that they are meaningful and happy. And on it goes with a Pew study. And we don't need them, do we? Do we need these studies to tell us that children are amazing? if you're young and you haven't had kids, to have somebody in your home who falls down and scrapes a knee and immediately comes running to you, you can experience that on TikTok. You can watch it and experience it. And when your daughter or your son gives you a big sloppy kiss because they just think you hung the moon, what's the cost of that? You can't buy it. What is the value of having been entrusted with a little image bearer of God that you get to teach about Jesus to them? Having a Psalm 115, perhaps? This is the beautiful picture that gets painted. You're a godly man. Your wife flourishes like a vine that produces fruit. And oh, you get to see your grandchildren. Ah, that is the stuff that life is made of. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for a Wretched News Break here on Wretched Radio. I'm Jimmy Hicks. Well, we start today with the Boy Scouts of America. Yeah, they're rebranding, in case you haven't heard. They're now going to be known as Scouting America because, well, you know, they've got to be more inclusive and allow girls to join the Boy Scouts, even though there's a Girl Scouts already in existence. The organization, which has been steeped in controversy over their past allegations of sexual abuse and its stance on LGBT members, will officially adopt the new name in February next year. However, they're encouraging people to start using it now. Don't think that's going to do too much to address the underlying issues. Anyway, moving on, an unusual story out of Berkeley where a furry, that's right, a furry who dresses as a saber-toothed tiger goes by the name of Spoticus, recently gave a lecture at the university. Spoticus, whose real name is Dr. David Benneron, is actually an inventor and entrepreneur who's credited with developing the green light heart sensor found in many smartwatches. So he really is an intelligent individual. Yeah, I know, that's debatable. Taxpayers in Massachusetts are footing a hefty bill to house and feed migrants seeking asylum in the state. Reports indicate that the state is paying up to $37 per person per day for meals that have been described as unappetizing and lacking in nutritional value. One nutrition professor even said the protein sources served are unidentifiable. And most of the taxpayers in Massachusetts, I'm sure, feel like those funds could be better allocated towards something essential for American citizens. Well, here's a concerning trend. It's not one that's surprising, but it's certainly concerning. The share of American patients with mental health diagnoses rose a staggering 40% from 2019 to 2023, according to a Fair Health analysis. The data reflects the anxiety and stress of the pandemic era. I'd also say the fear of missing out, or FOMO, contributes to it as well. You know, it's the trendy thing, and a lot of people don't want to miss out. And finally, British female darts players have forfeited a quarterfinals tournament match after being slated to face a biological male competitor. And these stories are just going to continue to increase and increase and increase, unfortunately. That's been today's Wretched News Break. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Important dates in Christian history. 988 AD. After examining several religions, Vladimir, Prince of Kiev, chooses Orthodox Christianity to unify and guide the Russian people. Even after a century of atheistic communist rule, Orthodoxy remains at the core of life in Eastern Europe to this day. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Dude, this is Wretched Radio. Dude, have you heard? You're not supposed to be a dude. Probably better if you're a dudette or just a duh. You're neither masculine nor feminine. You're just neutered. That is exactly what third wave feminism promotes. That men are no longer masculine. In a new book called Get Married by Brad Wilcox, it reveals what the Bible has been teaching us all along. Do it God's way and everybody is happier. The message today, hey, marriage, it needs to be totally egalitarian. This is the type of dynamic that she changes one diaper, you change one diaper. She feeds one bottle, you got to feed one bottle. Doing the chores, everything needs to be divided 50-50. Now, this is not, by the way, a promotion of patriarchy where women are just seen as the housekeepers, just the opposite. But the point of this particular chapter is that isn't what makes people happy. Division of labor is not what keeps a marriage together. What keeps a marriage together is when both parties are fully in, using their skills, playing out their roles correctly. Everybody's happy. Hey, what a shocker that is. Isn't that what the Bible says? When we play our roles the way that God has defined them, you are going to be happier. But listen to just some of the admonitions from progressives, which turns out are kind of hypocritical. Quote, this is from The Way We Really Are. We have every reason to believe that new values about marriage and sex roles will make it easier for parents to sustain and enrich their relationships. So women that are stuck in traditional marriages, according to feminist Jill Filipovich, are going to struggle with every emotional malady known to woman, from depression to anxiety to anger. They don't even smile or laugh a lot. Message: traditional virtues and roles make today's women miserable, and it's missing the point that marriage isn't about keeping tabs on who vacuumed last. It's not about keeping tabs on who put the Band-Aid on the child's knee when it was bleeding. It is about playing the role of husband and wife, and get ready for this, this is going to sound crazy, loving one another. And this is a message that the Bible has been delivering all along. And so too, by the way, have the Puritans. You probably think of them as not very fashionable and not very fun and certainly not very romantic. For your consideration, Richard Baxter: he that would have his estate increased, let him endeavor to increase the happiness of his wife. That's what makes a marriage happy. Yeah, I'm playing my role, desiring to make you happy. And how that gets divided, it's not the issue. It's not what fosters genuine contentment. Listen to this quote from Matthew Henry. The woman was made of a rib out of the side of Adam, not made out of his head to rule over him, nor out of his feet to be trampled upon by him, but out of his side to be equal with him, under his arm to be protected, and near his heart to be beloved. And guess what? Even feminist women, they won't say it publicly, but privately, if this book is accurate, it's kind of what they're looking for in a man. Somebody strong, somebody who is able, somebody who will protect, somebody who can provide. They actually want that, all the while saying, you don't need that. What you needed is an egalitarian marriage where everything is divvied up. That's going to make you happy while you go about the business of maintaining your own life, your own personality, your own Rolodex, your own bank account, your own last name. You keep you in the center of the marriage. And those are the marriages that fall apart. And even feminists, as quoted in this book, admit, I kind of like it when a man is strong. Women, supposedly stuck in more traditional family arrangements, according to one feminist, they're going to struggle with just about every emotional malady known to woman, from depression to anxiety to anger. In fact, you won't even smile a lot. That's the message of the elites. That's what they say. It's just not the way that they live. In a day and age when Harry Styles gets plaudits for wearing a dress in a Vogue cover shoot, we're told that men who break free of outmoded gender roles and virtues are more likely to flourish. This message comes through loud and clear from the ivory tower. Husbands who have wives who out-earn them are happier than those who don't, says Slate, ripping off a study from the University of Connecticut. The authors say performance of masculinity is harmful to men. Now, please note, abuse, being a jerk, that isn't masculine, that's sin. But being a man, being strong, being decisive, thoughtful, wise, engaging a wise spouse, well, if you don't do that, you're just dumb. But you're still, it's like, I know where we're going, dear. Let's do this. And if you've got input into this, believe me, I certainly want to hear it because I'd be a fool if I didn't listen to somebody as wise as you. Men in egalitarian relationships, says The Guardian, enjoys more intimacy and better intimacy. New York Times article, how men can succeed in the boardroom and the bedroom. Equality. That's what it needs to be. That you just split it. You keep yours. She does hers. You do yours. You're going to be happier. But as we shall see, writes the author, the expressed preferences of our elites often look different from their revealed preferences. When it comes to gender expectations, members of our ruling class often talk left, walk right. That is so true. Now, all of these elite people, they've actually done studies on this. They make a ton of money in their family, and the husband is the primary breadwinner. And yet they write about the need for egalitarianism as they define it. TikTok stars inveigh against toxic masculinity, getting billions of views. Academics tell us conformity to traditional masculine norms is associated with intimate relationship satisfaction. Oh, okay. If that's what I'll get from being egalitarian, then I'm all in. However, male breadwinning remains a powerful draw for women when it comes to choosing a life partner. A study in the Trends in the United States found the tendency for women to marry men with higher incomes than themselves has persisted. Huh, that's weird. The tendency was true even for the growing number of women who are marrying men with less education than themselves. Huh. What else is enticing to these elite women? Male strength. One study reporting, physical strength determined over 70% of men's bodily attractiveness. Huh. Strength and masculinity is a consistent predictor of both mating and reproduction. Huh. Other research confirms that industriousness, ambition, good financial prospects increase men's appeal as a mate. Even in the 21st century, men's ability to provide and protect predicts women's interest in making it permanent. Because that's the way we're built. It's the way that we're made. And if you're a young lady and you have heard these messages, I would simply encourage you, don't listen to me, don't listen to this book, listen to your God, listen to your Bible. We got roles to play. And when we play them, as this book reveals through social studies, we're happier. Why? Because we're doing it God's way. A husband's love is the life of the marriage. The wife's submission is the beauty of it. That would be William Gouge. This is Thomas Watson. Husband, if you love your wives, love them with tender affection. And that, by the way, is what this book brings out. That it's not just that a man puffs out his chest and he goes about the business of making all the decisions and being the breadwinner and just stay home and cook, dear, I've got this. No, what really makes a marriage happy is when the husband is tender, loving, interested. Let's think about those marriage vows again that were introduced in the 16th century by Thomas Cranmer, to love and to cherish. To have and to hold. Where did they get that idea? The Bible. John James, a husband must consider his wife not only as his companion, but as his tenderest and best friend. Richard Sibbes, a godly husband, must make his wife feel valued, cherished, and secure in his love. John Owen, the husband who loves his wife as himself will protect her, provide for her, and honor her. So please don't hear the dudes need to just start acting a little bit more masculinely and then go to that men's conference where they do sword swallowing and other antics and shenanigans. Love your wife. Love her. Love her. Cherish her. Protect her. Defend her. Don't be sissy boys. Don't be soy boys. Be godly men. And that means more than just strength, but it doesn't mean no strength. This is Wretched Radio.
As most of you know, we're at a pivotal moment in our culture. We are facing a desperate need for truth. And here at Gospel Partners Media, we see the need, and that's why we are launching our most ambitious makeover ever. A Christian version of the Daily Wire. It's coming later this year. It's a facelift for this ministry. It's not just another initiative. It's a call to action for every believer everywhere. Join us as we welcome 8 powerful and theologically sound voices to our family. Men like Dr. John Crotts and Dr. Greg Gifford gearing up to bring you insight on everything from ethics and theology to science and parenting. Look, it's time for a bold response to a darkening world, and you can be part of it. Join our $250,000 match campaign right now, and together we can illuminate the shadows. Visit wretched.org/fellows to learn more. That's wretched.org/fellows. And let's build this thing together.
If you're familiar with the Tomorrow Club's outstanding ministry, oh, what a testimony. Eastern Europe, Africa, poor places. The Tomorrow Clubs go in. They assemble the kids every week, preach the gospel, have them memorize the Bible, sing songs, love on them, give them some treats. It has been an outstanding ministry for over 20 years, and it's growing like a nobody's business, and it is a testimony to their faithfulness that over 50% of the Tomorrow Club volunteer leaders were Tomorrow Club kid attendees. Now, they, in their villages, are teaching the kids the gospel as volunteers for the Tomorrow Clubs. I got to tell you, that is a testimony. If you love supporting evangelistic ministries that are faithful, that actually preach repentance and faith, it's an outstanding ministry. If you can support it, would commend them to you by visiting tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Okay, so imagine that you're inside of a maze, and every corner that you take, there's another wall, there's another obstacle, and you finally get to the point of frustration where you think you're never going to get out. But then imagine a different scenario. You're still inside that maze, but every corner you take is a guide who has a flashlight and is saying, nope, that's the right way to go. And in that scenario, we welcome you to Transform with Dr. Greg Gifford. And whether you've listened or not, you'll realize really quickly it's not your everyday radio show. Transform with Dr. Greg Gifford takes issues that many, if not all of us, struggle with, and it matches them up to hope and healing through the pages of the Bible. It is genuinely an entirely new perspective. New episodes drop every Saturday morning in your favorite podcast spot or at transformed.org/podcast. Transformed with Dr. Greg Gifford.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the Mediator. God is holy and cannot have fellowship with sinful men. But Jesus is both righteous man and holy God, and through him we have direct access to God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Bad host, very bad host. This is Wretched Radio. There it was, sitting up on a tee, talking about the importance of date night between husbands and wives, and I forgot to mention an opportunity. Thursday night, 9 p.m., make it date night. Sit around your computer. Not something we normally recommend, but you will watch our premiere of a mega event with a mega initiative being announced that we are hoping will encourage you. Ken Ham is going to be with us. Phil Johnson is going to be with us. Tim Challies, Jason Lyle, John Crotts, Adam Tyson, a plethora of evangelicals who are joining this ministry to get louder and to be stronger, to be broader, so that we can utilize all of the platforms available that we can communicate the gospel on. We hope you'll join us date night this Thursday, May 9th, 9 p.m. Do not miss it, please. And consider, if you would be so kind, partnering with us. We want to be a ministry that has some legs. We want to be a ministry that is sound and reliable, doesn't end up going all squishy and veering to the left as too many ministries have done. please consider partnering with us. We've got a matching campaign right now of $250,000. And if you would please consider partnering with us, your gift will be matched dollar for dollar. Wretched.org/fellows. If you want to learn more, see who these people are that are joining us. Eight of them. Eight! Can you imagine? They said yes to us. Maybe that isn't a sign of their credibility after all. But we hope that you will consider meeting them on Thursday night, May 9th, and perhaps consider partnering with us. Wretched.org/donate. Lo and behold, what have we discovered from a book called Get Married? That women actually like masculine men. That's right. They don't hate them. They like them. This book, it uses a bunch of social studies. It uses a bunch of different anecdotes from different people, but basically making the case that the Bible makes for itself. When a man acts like a man and a woman acts like a woman and they get married and they say, I do till death do them part, and they become one flesh, happiness abounds in profound ways. It's so, if you're young and you're resisting marriage, let me ask you a question. How many friends do you have that you see every day that that relationship has lasted more than a year? 5 years? Got anybody? Bet not. Imagine having a nearest and dearest for 20 years? 30? 40. We got a couple in our church. I believe it was 42 or 43 years. You can't buy that. That's glorious. That is what makes life so meaningful, and you grow in it, and you experience such profound things to get, have a baby to get. Go ahead. Name something more profound than having a baby together. There's nothing that even comes close to that. Don't be afraid of marriage. It is good. We just have to do it God's way and not the way the world tells us. This is the conclusion. The bottom line. Even in today's marriages, between a woman's perception of her mate as classically masculine, both in style and some substance, and her happiness. When a man acts like a godly man, a loving, strong man, women are attracted to it. They want their man to not just be classically masculine, but a mate who is willing to invest emotionally. In other words, you're in. And guess what? You'll experience profundity. You'll experience conversations that you didn't think that you would ever have. You can't even imagine what they're going to be like. That is going to happen to you. A Pew study found finding someone who has a steady job is important for 78% of single women. Okay? Harvard study by sociologist Alexandra Killawad found that when a wife loses her job, there's no consequence for the marriage. But when the husband isn't employed, his risk of divorce shoots up 33%. That's consistent with the idea that breadwinning remains a central component of the marital contract for husbands. Dude, step up. Start going to work, getting there on time. Stop listening to TikTok people tell you that you need to quietly quit and forge a path forward so that there will be a godly woman who trusts you. But that is not enough. It's the Bible makes this clear, that the couples that do the best are the ones that care the most for each other. What is important is not that they share household chores on a roughly 50-50 basis, but rather the sense that the man is on duty when he's home, especially that he is practically and emotionally engaged with the kids on weeknights and weekends. Research indicates, no matter what ideology you possess, what matters for husbands and wives is a subjective sense of fairness and sharing responsibilities as a couple or families. Now, how they define fairness, that's up to them to sort out. Splitting housework 50-50, not important per se. For marital or intimate satisfaction, it depends on the couple's expectation. They sort it out together. and they do the dance of marriage that is a unique dance for every couple as long as they are all dancing to the same music, which is a desire to be in it and to care and to provide and protect. I don't need this book to tell me that. Listen to your Bible or listen to these dead guys. John Milton, marriage is a partnership of equals where each spouse respects and supports the other. John Calvin, a husband should cherish his wife as his own body, nourishing and caring for her. William Gurnall, a husband should treat his wife with gentleness and understanding, always seeking her good. And then you don't keep lists about who picked up the dirty socks. Pick them up if you can. And if you miss it, the other one doesn't really care, as long as the other person knows you're committed and in it. Jonathan Edwards, a husband must strive to create a home where his wife feels safe, loved, and respected. John Flavel, a husband's love for his wife should be evident in his words, his actions, and his attitudes. John Owen, a husband should never belittle or demean his wife, but always lift her up and encourage her. John Calvin, again, everybody named John. A husband's love should inspire his wife to grow and flourish in her unique gifts and talents. And a non-John, William Perkins, a husband's love should be unwavering and constant, even in the face of adversity. Where did these guys get these kooky notions? The Bible. We've been saying this all along. We have to get back to doing marriage God's way. This has been a failed feminist experiment. It simply has not worked. What is important is not that they share household chores 50-50, but that they're emotionally engaged. No matter what your ideology is, that the 50-50 thing is not important. In our survey, sharing the care of the kids is predictive of greater marital happiness and intimate satisfaction across the ideological spectrum. There's just peace and happiness. What's striking? How often the findings, the actual findings of these surveys and studies contradict the dominant narratives. So you've got all of these feminist academics that are making stuff up, and guess what they're doing? They're keeping young people from getting married. They're keeping people from having children. In other words, they're keeping young people from having joy and a profound life. Despite being the group, here comes the irony, no, hypocrisy. Despite being the group that most likely to profess progressive gender ideas and to be publicly dismissive of the idea that men should be breadwinners, guess which group is the least likely to dispense with a male breadwinner in the privacy of their own homes? Yep, the upper middle class. Ironic? Yeah. That you've got to do it the way that I tell you to, but don't do it the way that I actually do it. It's elite hypocrisy is what it is. From the book, what we see is that even in the 21st century America, elite and ordinary women typically prefer more masculine men to get and stay married to. These men are strong, ambitious, high status, who they believe will be good providers and protective and make them feel physically and emotionally safe. And those are the women who are most satisfied in marriages where the man measures up. Last quote, today's women are happiest with good family men, men who can be counted upon to excel as breadwinners and engaged as husbands and fathers. You know, the way the Bible says, please, young person, rethink your understanding of marriage. Rethink your understanding of having children. Don't believe the elites. Believe the Bible. Getting married, having kids, awesome. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.